The next day, Kid and Falcon mounted up and rode south toward John Chisholm's South Spring Ranch.
Sure gonna miss this part of the country, Falcon. The smell of the pine and the juniper, and the creosote and sage blossoms in the spring, and the snow in the winter. I don't expect I'll be seeing much of that down Sonora way.
Just don't get to missing it too much, Kid. Not for a few years at least. Then you can manage to put on a few pounds and grow some facial hair to hide your features.
I don't intend to come back for quite a spell. And then, I'll probably head on over to Texas. See what that part of the country has come to since I've been gone.
Glad to hear it, Kid.
Deke Slayton and Roy Cobb led a group of Apache renegades to the edge of a pine forest, ending at a north pasture of John Chisholm's South Springs Ranch. Dusk was spreading over a grassy expanse filled with grazing longhorn cattle. Slayton and Cobb were hand-picked men working for Thomas Catron. Catron had grown tired of the way Murphy and Dolan were bungling the affair in Lincoln County. The object was to put John Chisholm out of the beef contract business so Catron and his partners could have all the government contracts for themselves.
This is gonna be easy. No range riders, nobody around. Hell, we didn't need all these damn engines after all.
Roy glanced over his shoulder. The Mescalero Apaches were well armed with repeating rifles which Catron had sent down with Deke and Roy. Catron's impatience with Dolan and Murphy had reached a boiling point. Now, he was going to take matters into his own hands. Flat, coppery faces framed by straight, coal black hair were turned toward Deke and Roy. Most of the Apaches wore leather leggings and deerskin shirts this time of year, while a few wore ragged U.S. cavalry coats and pants stolen from the worn garment piles of Fort Stanton.
It won't hurt to have them. They can help us drive off damn near every one of them longhorns to Catron's packing house west of Santa Fe. They'll be hung carcasses of beef before Chisholm ever misses them.
I was expecting a fight.
The fight's gone out of what's left of them so-called regulators since Sheriff Garrett killed Billy the Kid. Everybody thought he was bulletproof.
And maybe now Chisholm's pulled in his horns.
Deke gave the cattle a final look. The herd would easily number 200 head.
Let's get this done, Deke. There's still one dangerous friend of Chisholm's out there someplace. Big gent named Falcon McAllister. He's killed off a bunch of Dolan's boys and made it look easy. I heard he blowed Jesse Evans right out of his boots, and Jesse was one of the best with a gun I ever saw, next to you.
Deke prided himself on his reputation with guns, pistols, or rifles. Thomas Catron was paying him very well to pull off this raid on Chisholm.
Well, he was told this McAllister hadn't really taken his side, only that he was a friend to Chisholm's. And if he happened to be near where there was any trouble over Chisholm's stock, he'd use his guns to lend Chisholm a hand. Besides, you can't believe half the stories these locals tell. According to them, this Falcon is damn near a killing machine. Ain't nobody that good, not even me.
I sure as hell hope McAllister don't cross trails with us while we're driving off his herd.
That's why we've got nearly 24 Injuns with us, Roy. If McAllister shows up, we'll send them all after him. He'd need a goddamn Gatling gun to stop this bunch of renegades.
Upon a signal from Deke, the mounted Apaches began to spread out south of the herd to begin driving them north toward Santa Fe. Cobb pointed to a section of hilly country to the west.
Appears to be a couple of cowboys heading towards the herd.
Yeah. One of them's riding a big black horse. The other guy's a little fella riding a sorrel. Damned if he ain't wearing a battered top hat like them coach drivers do up in St. Louis.
Like the kind Billy the Kid wore. Could be he's just some saloon drunk who found that old hat in the trash dump.
Hey, Gokula, take 5 or 6 of your warriors and run them cowboys off. If they try to put up a fight, kill the sons of bitches. No sense in taking any chances.
Shit, them two ain't running off.
Deke glanced that way, once noticing the gleam of rifles in the hands of the two strangers. An Apache flew off his pony's back, tumbling to the grass.
Son of a bitch!
The Apaches returned fire. Answering fire came from the strangers. A shot from the little man in the top hat sent another Indian rolling off the side of his speeding pony.
Damn, they both have got a hell of a good aim, a real good luck.
Falcon and the kid jumped off their horses, kneeling as they held rifles to their shoulders.
Damnation! Run get some more of them engines! Bring them all! Let them cattle drift for a spell until we kill those two bastards.
I recognize that big feller by his description now, Deke. That's Falcon McAllister. They say he's a big son of a bitch, always riding a black horse. And he's proved who he is by the way he can shoot.
Ain't neither one of them missed. Maybe it is McAllister. We'll send every Apache we've got down on him and see how good this Falcon really is.
Hey! Bring them two cowboys down!
Deke watched the pair mount their horses again. Now they headed for the cover of some slender pinyon pines just to the west of the valley the herd was in.
Shit! They'll be harder to kill now. I may have to do this job myself.
The Indians raced back and forth near the pines, some hanging under their ponies' necks to make smaller targets for the men hidden in the forest. Deke spurred his horse toward the fight. Roy was riding off to Deke's left.
We'll circle them pinions and get around behind them.
Roy saw three more Indians drop from their ponies' backs.
Those bastards sure can shoot, Deke.
One man don't scare me. I don't care who he is or how bad his reputation is.
There's two of them.
I can count, Roy.
Roy swung his horse to the southwest to follow Deke in a circle around the spot where the pair of riflemen were taking such a deadly toll on the renegade Apaches.
Jesus, I ain't sure we've been paid enough money for this.
Roy caught up with Deke, aiming for a place in the woods well to the south of the two riflemen. They dismounted and hid their horses. Deke crept forward, his rifle cocked and ready, weaving his way through a dark pinyon forest. Roy was off to his left with his rifle ready.
I can't see a damn thing.
Just keep listening to their guts.
Deke could see some of the Apaches out on the open prairie falling back to hold a conference out of rifle range. Less than a dozen Indians were still in the fight. The others were dead or wounded badly enough to retreat. Deke saw them gathering in a swale, darker shadows among the dusky shapes of yucca and choya dotting the valley.
It ain't far now. They ain't expecting us from behind.
I sure as hell hope they ain't.
Spread out. Don't shoot till you're sure of a target.
This ain't smart, Deke. If this is McAllister, he ain't gonna be dumb enough not to watch his backside every now and then.
Shut the hell up and keep moving.
Maybe we ought to use pistols, seeing as we're getting this close.
Deke knew he could kill both men if he kept the element of surprise on their side. The only possible problem could come if somehow Falcon McAllister was anticipating an attack from the rear. Deke knew exactly where the riflemen were hidden there.
Gotcha.
After these two bastards had killed so many of his Apaches, it would be a pure pleasure to put a bullet through the backs of both men. Roy stepped on a dry twig.
Be careful where you put your goddamn feet.
Sorry, it's dark as hell in here.
Stay where you are and cover me. I'll slip up closer, and you keep your gun ready to back me up.
Deke crept onward only a footstep at a time, staying in the shelter of pinyon trunks wherever he could.
Them yellow-bellied Apaches.
Deke made his way on the balls of his feet to a thick pine trunk less than 40 yards from where the pair of riflemen had been firing. Roy was 20 or 30 yards behind him, keeping an eye on his back.
I've got you now, boys.
Can you see him?
Not yet. Now shut the hell up so they won't hear us.
Well, with hearing you, I can see you.
Deke froze, for he quickly realized that the voice did not belong to Roy Cobb.
Oh, shit.
Deke lay on his back. A curious ringing began in his ears, replacing the blast of gunshots he had heard moments before the slug hit him.
I'm shot.
That's about the size of it.
Who the hell are you?
Not that it matters, but I'm Falcon McAllister.
Deke's trembling fingers closed around his pistol grips, and with all the effort he could muster, he clawed the Colt free from its holster.
I'm gonna kill you, you son.
son of a bitch!
Plenty of folks have tried. You won't be the first.
Deke managed to bring up his Colt, lifting his head in spite of tremendous pain, searching for a target among the pinyon forest shadows.
You missed. You ain't much when it comes to hitting what you aim at, are you?
You bastard!
You keep calling me names.
Who's the little son of a bitch?
He's Billy Bonney. Well, that's the name he's been going by since he came to Lincoln County.
Like hell! Pat Garrett killed the kid. He's already in the ground at Fort Sumner.
Garrett shot the wrong man. A man named Billy Barlow. The kid is very much alive. He just shot your partner. We've been waiting for the two of you to show up.
Can't be.
It's a fact. The trouble is, you won't be alive to see if I'm telling you the truth.
I'm gonna track you down and kill you, McAllister!
Uh-huh. Adios, buddy. Kid, over here. It's time you started that long ride to the Mexican border.
It's been a pleasure to know you, Falcon McAllister. Thanks for all you did to try to help me and my friends. We lost the war in Lincoln County, that's for sure. But we damn sure made him pay in blood to get it done.
The kid took Falcon's hand.
Best you start riding, son. And good luck to you. If you're as smart as I think you are, you won't ever show your face in the New Mexico Territory again. Let them all think you're buried up at Fort Sumner.
The kid nodded and made off for his horse. Falcon mounted Diablo and headed for Chisholm's South Springs Ranch with a tale to tell. By the time Falcon got to the house, Chisholm and his men were out in the front yard, holding rifles, shotguns, and pistols. When he saw Falcon ride up, Chisholm tipped his hat back and stood there with his hands on his hips.
I should have known it was you, McAllister. Hell, ever since you came to Lincoln County, there's been a war on. So why should tonight be any different?
Me and my friend was riding by when we saw about 25 mescaleros trying to steal some of your beeves.
You and one other man took on 30 Injuns by yourselves?
Yep, and two white men who seemed to want your cattle for themselves. They said they worked for Thomas Catron from up Santa Fe way.
Where are these gents now, Falcon? I'd kind of like to have a word with them.
In hell, most likely. They didn't survive.
Hell, we was fixing to have to go to war when I heard all them gunshots over toward the south pasture. Come on in and light and sit, and I'll buy you a drink.
Falcon walked up on the porch and started to enter the house. Chisholm's foreman, Mac, stopped him by putting a large hand on his shoulder.
Falcon, I know you and the boss had some differences a while back, but I want you to know I'm much obliged to you for taking a hand in all this. The boss was mighty worried about losing the ranch till you and the kid took Dolan's mind off him.
It wasn't so much, Mac. You'd have done the same for Mr. Chisholm.
Yeah, I would, Falcon. But the point is, most men, when they seen what they was up against here in Lincoln County, would have run for the hills, not stepped in to fight like you and Billy Bonney did. Anyways, you got my gratitude and my friendship.
He stuck out his hand and stood there, his face red and flushed, as if he wasn't sure Falcon would take it. Falcon grabbed the hand, which swallowed his, and gave it a firm shake.
You're a good man, Mac, and Chisholm's lucky to have you as his ramrod. You take care now, you hear?
Chisholm stuck his head out the door.
You coming in, Falcon, or you waiting for this bourbon to age a little more?
Falcon followed Chisholm into his study. Chisholm poured two large glasses.
Falcon, there ain't many men in this territory I'd let talk to me the way you did the other day at your saloon, and not do something about it.
You took it, John, because you knew I was right. I suspect you've been more than a little ashamed of yourself for the past few weeks.
Damned if you ain't got more than a little of your dad in you, son. Whenever we get crossways, he'd sit there with that same expression on his face, like he knew I was wrong and he was right. And damned if he wasn't, most of the time. By the way, son, who was the man who was out there with you killing them Injuns right and left? He sure must have had some sand in his gizzard to stand with you against them odds. especially for someone else's cattle.
That's what I'm here to talk to you about, John. First, I'd like to know what's going on with you and the Dolan Bunch. Just how deep are you in with those bastards?
Let me explain a few things first, son. Not by way of making excuses, you understand, but just so's you'll know the lay of the land. I got me over 100,000 acres, and more beeves than you can rightly count. The state and the county have been eating me alive with taxes, and Dolan and his lawyers are biting at my heels with lawsuit after lawsuit like so many rabid dogs. With Judge Bristol in his pocket, Dolan can have damn near anything he wants in these parts. When I realized Dolan and his friends weren't having to pay any taxes, I figured the best thing for me to do was swallow my pride and join in with them. Hell, it's the only way I could see to save this spread I've spent the last 15 years building.
I can see that, John, but the kid and his friends could sure have used your help when they came asking.
That was one of the hardest things I ever done, Falcon, turning them boys down when they asked for my help. I haven't slept a good night's sleep since I did it.
Well, John, maybe what I'm about to tell you will help make you sleep a little better. The kid didn't hold any hard feelings towards you for what you did. He understood more than you think he did. He didn't know why you suddenly changed sides, but he knew you were an honorable man and told me you must have had a good reason.
I like that boy, Falcon. I kept hoping by my refusal to give him money to continue his fight, he'd have to leave the territory. I figured that was the only way he'd ever survive the Lincoln County War. I guess I was wrong about him leaving, but I was damn sure correct about him not surviving the fracas.
Don't be too sure about that, John.
What are you talking about, Falcon? The kid's dead and buried.
My dad had an old saying, John. Son, don't believe anything you hear, and only half of what you see.
Are you telling me those stories about Garrett shooting the wrong man are true?
No, John. I'm not telling you anything. And I especially don't want you to repeating those crazy tales of someone else being buried in the kid's coffin.
So, I guess that feller out there with you, who was ready to take on the whole Apache tribe, was kind of small-like, but fights like any two men?
Let's say no more about that, John. There's already enough rumors going around, and if I were you, and if you value your friendship with the kid, I'd do everything I could to put a stop to that kind of talk. In fact, that's what I was coming here to talk to you about when we ran into those damn Indians.
What can I do to help to put those ugly, untrue rumors to rest, Falcon?
Well, Pat Garrett has been trying to get the governor to authorize the payment of the reward for killing the kid. So far, he's been stonewalled.
Chisholm sat back in his chair. Falcon thought he could almost see the worry wrinkles fading as the man realized his betrayal hadn't meant the death of the kid.
I thought maybe if you and some other prominent citizens raised some money for the reward, the talk of this kid still being alive might kind of die down.
I'll do it, by God. I'll give Garrett $1,000 of my own money, and I'll see to it that Dolan and his partners come up with some more.
I know Pat's going to want to run for re-election to sheriff. It might be better if you could put a bug in Dolan's ear that he should perhaps support Kimball for sheriff. The sooner Garrett's out of Lincoln County, the sooner the kid and the regulators will be just an old memory.
Well, I don't think that will be too hard. Since Garrett's killed the kid, he ain't been too popular around the area anyway.
Then we understand each other.
Completely. And I'll do everything in my power to squelch those rumors about the kid still being alive. Of course, I'd be mighty embarrassed were the kid to show up in these parts later.
Won't happen, John. You have my word. If, and I emphasize the word if the kid were still alive, I can promise you he would become a new man and light out for parts unknown.
Chisholm stood up and held out his hand.
Falcon, I can't tell you what this visit has meant to me. For the first time since the burial, I can go around with my head held high.
You've no reason not to, John. As that fellow Shakespeare once said, all's well that ends well.
When Falcon approached his cabin after leaving John Chisholm's South Spring Ranch, he saw three horses in his corral. He eased off Diablo and walked to the back of the cabin, walking on his toes as to not make any sounds. He doubted if his company was hostile, otherwise they wouldn't have left their horses in plain view. He filled his right hand with iron and pulled the back door open with his left hand. He stepped inside, moving to the side with his back against the wall. One of the three men sitting at his table looked up, then turned to the others.
See, I told you he'd come loaded for bear.
Seeing the men sitting there, drinking coffee with their hands in plain sight on the table, Falcon relaxed and holstered his pistol.
Evening, gentlemen. Mind if I join you in that coffee?
No, go right ahead. We boiled plenty, and it's good and strong.
Whew. This stuff's strong enough to float a horseshoe.
Sorry about that. We've been on a trail a good ways. We needed something to keep us awake till you got here.
Falcon leaned back against the kitchen counter, his feet crossed at the ankles, sipped his coffee and watched the men, waiting for them to explain who they were and why they were at his cabin in the middle of the night.
Falcon, my name's Josiah G. Skurlock, but everybody just calls me Doc. This here's Henry Brown and John Middleton.
Falcon nodded. Now he remembered. These men had been among the first group to join together and call themselves the Regulators.
Well, howdy, boys. To what do I owe the pleasure of your visit?
We hear you were a good friend of the kid, always there when he needed you. We also hear rumors it was you took out Jesse Evans and a couple of his boys. When John Tunstall was killed, a group of friends and former employees of his joined together to avenge his death. When Bob Weedman, Dick Brewer, Charlie Boder, Fred Waite, the kid, and us joined up, Falcon, we took a blood oath. We swore an oath to remain loyal to each other no matter what happened, and to make sure whoever killed John was punished. Now, we ain't exactly proud of what we'd done back when things were getting hot and heavy. When the kid got indicted for killing Sheriff Billy Brady, I was in Kansas. And both Middleton and Brown here were out of town, too.
Go on.
Falcon, it was me put those slugs in Brady, not the kid.
Falcon stared at Skurlock.
Now, don't get me wrong. All of us, the kid included, did plenty of things we could have gone to jail for. But we was acting as deputies, duly sworn and appointed.
Cut to the chase. What Doc is trying to say is that we're all feeling mighty guilty that we took an oath to stick together, and then when the going got rough, we lit out and left the kid to do our work, and he got himself killed for it.
Falcon kept his mouth shut. No matter how good friends these were, the kid, too many people already knew he was alive. He wasn't about to tell anyone else the truth.
Yeah! So now we're back and we want to finish what we started and make those that killed Tunstall and the kid pay.
And just how do you boys intend to do that?
We're going to kill Dolan and the hired killers he's got with him.
I don't think that's such a good idea.
Why not?
First off, he's too well connected and too well protected. If you did manage to kill him, his friends in Santa Fe and the army would never stop until all the men were hunted down and killed or hanged.
We're willing to take our chances. We owe it to the kid and the others who got killed trying to do what we all promised to do.
No, I think there's a better way. Why not go after the men who did Dolan's dirty work for him? The Seven Rivers Gang and the Doña Ana Bunch, led by John Kinney. Those men are all known outlaws. No one would mind overly much if you took them out. You could hit fast and hard and get away clean. And you wouldn't have John Law on your trail for the rest of your lives.
Would that hurt Dolan?
Oh, in the worst way. He'd no longer have them to do his bidding, and he'd lose all those cattle these men have been stealing to fulfill his government contract to supply beef to the Mescaleros. It would cripple his operations here in Lincoln County.
Would you be willing to ride with us?
I usually don't join causes, but in this case I might make an exception. These gangs have been riding roughshod over the entire county, and it's time someone took them down. In fact, I just might have me a plan.
The next evening, Falcon and the others were on a ridge overlooking an area near Mesilla where the Seven Rivers Gang was camped. There were close to 200 head of stolen cattle the gang was preparing to drive to Santa Fe to sell to the government for Dolan. Falcon put his binoculars down and looked at the other men.
I count about 20 men. That makes it about 4-1 against us. You boys ready?
Ready.
We'll ride in fast and hard, out of the west so the sun will be at our backs.
He pulled his Winchester 44-40 carbine out of his saddle boot, levered around into the chamber, and loosened the hammer thong on his Colt sidearm. Henry Brown put his reins in his teeth and pulled a greener 10-gauge short-barreled shotgun from his saddle boot, filling his pockets with extra shells. John Middleton filled both of his hands with pistols and stuck a third in the front of his pants behind his belt for quick access.
For the kid.
And for all the other men these bastards have killed. Ha!
They leaned forward in their saddles and spurred their mounts, bounding over the ridge to ride out of the sun straight into the outlaws' camp. Several men in the camp, sitting around the fire, drinking coffee and whiskey, looked up.
What the hell was that noise?
Wallace Olinger, the brother of the man Kid shotgunned to death in his escape from jail, dropped his coffee cup and grabbed for his rifle, leaning against a nearby tree. Falcon, pistol in his left hand and rifle in his right, raised the carbine to his shoulder. The first shot took Billy Matthews, catapulting his body into the campfire. Skurlock rode towards Olinger. Olinger's second shot hit Skurlock in the side, cutting a shallow groove through his flank. Skurlock didn't flinch at the burning in his side, but took aim and thumbed back the hammer on his Colt Army 44. Olinger staggered back, but continued to fire until a bullet from Falcon tore through his lower jaw, shattering it, sending teeth and blood flying. Brown twisted in the saddle. The molten lead buckshot hit John Beckwith just below his buttocks, tearing his left leg off the thigh. He sprawled on his face to be trampled as Brown's horse ran right over his writhing body. Skurlock saw John Long, the man who had set fire to McSween's house, and gave chase. Unable to reload with his mount galloping at full speed, Skurlock rode up next to Long and pulled a bowie knife out of his belt. He slashed out backhanded with the razor-sharp blade, cutting a long gash in the side of Long's neck. Middleton's shot hit Buck Powell in the left temple, blowing a piece of his skull the size of his fist into the air. Falcon booted his carbine and filled both hands with iron. He blew three more men to hell, taking a bullet himself in his calf. He slowed Diablo and wrapped a bandana around his leg to stop the bleeding, then joined Middleton, Brown, and Skurlock at the edge of the camp.
You men had enough for now?
Skurlock surveyed the scene. There were at least 15 dead, 4 or 5 severely wounded. A couple of men had managed to make it to their horses and had escaped.
Yeah, I've got no stomach for shooting wounded men.
Let them live or die on their own. I ain't planning on putting them out of their misery.
That's Vamoose. We're finished here.
Falcon and the Regulator spent the next day recovering from their wounds. As they sat around, they discussed their various options.
Far as I can tell from what I've heard, John Kenny and the Doña Anya bunch hangs out most nights at the Palace Saloon in Lincoln.
It'll be pretty dangerous to brace them there, because Dolan got the town sewed up tight.
What about Sheriff Garrett? I'd love to put a window in his skull for what he did to the kid.
Men, you're going to have to trust me on this, but Garrett's on our side. Just believe me, Pat Garrett is not to be harmed. I know for a fact the kid would want it this way.
You're asking a lot, Falcon.
I bet if I prove to you that Garrett is a friend, I'll go to him and make sure when we're ready to take out the Kenny gang, he'll be out of town with his deputies.
You think he'd do that for us?
I can almost guarantee it.
All right. If Garrett and his men are gone when we ride into town, I'll take that as a sign he's a friend of the Regulators, and I'll pass the word that he's not to be bothered by any friends of the kid.
Good. We'll wait until after midnight, when the boys will be liquored up as much as possible. Then we'll enter the saloon, front and back at the same time.
It was close to midnight when the four men rode into Lincoln. Garrett had been contacted, and had taken his two deputies with him to go to the site of the Mesilla Massacre of the Seven Rivers Gang to investigate the killings. Brown and Middleton had stationed themselves next to the saloon's back door and would await Falcon's signal to enter. Falcon and Skurlock entered, their
pistols loaded up 6 and 6 and loose in their holsters. They stopped just inside the door and surveyed the situation. John Kenny was standing at the bar, his back to the door, his arm around a saloon girl, a half-full bottle of whiskey on the counter in front of him. Andrew Boyle and Joey Nash were in a poker game off to the right side of the room. There were 3 or 4 other men in the hall that Falcon didn't recognize, and he didn't know if they were members of the gang or not. He supposed he would find out soon enough. He noticed a double-barreled shotgun on a rack behind the bar, nudged Skurlock to show him its location. The patrons noticed the 2 gunmen standing in the doorway, staring at Kenny's back. Kenny took his arm from around the girl, motioned with his head for her to leave, and slowly turned around, leaning back against the bar on his elbows.
Well, if it isn't Doc Skurlock and a tall gambler from Colorado, you boys here to get drunk and cry about your baby-faced friend? I want to tell you boys something. I went out to Boot Hill today and pissed on Bonnie's grave. What do you think about that?
I'm glad. A man shouldn't have to die with a full bladder. It makes such a mess when he wets his pants.
You think you're man enough to take me, McAllister?
It don't take much of a man to kill a back-shooting coward, Kenny. It also ain't much of a man who'll desecrate a man's grave but didn't have the cojones to stand up to him when he was alive.
I wasn't afraid of nobody, least of all the kid.
That's not what the kid told me. He said when you were guarding him on his way to jail in Lincoln, he called you out and you turned white as a sheet and almost started crying. He said if he hadn't been shackled hand and foot, you would have turned tail and run away.
That's a goddamn lie!
Well, coward, I'm not shackled, and my back's not turned. Now show me what you're made of, if you've got the sand.
Kenny sleeved his mouth with the back of his arm. His eyes shifted to his men on either side of Skurlock and Falcon.
Oh, and your hired guns are welcome to join the dance, long as they remember somebody's got to pay the band.
Kenny stepped away from the bar, his right hand over the butt of his gun. Falcon's bullet took Kenny in the stomach, doubling him over and driving him to his knees. Farman reached for his shotgun and Falcon shot him through the hand. Andrew Boyle and Joey Nash and the other 3 men at their table on Falcon's left all jumped up, drawing their pistols. Middleton and Brown stepped through the back door. Andrew Boyle was hit at the waist and almost cut in half, his guts and blood spraying out to cover the men next to him. Middleton had pistols in both hands. One shivering man was left standing at the table amid the dead bodies. Falcon headed toward him.
You listen up and you listen up good. When Sheriff Garrett gets here, you be sure to tell him Kenny drew first, and the others joined in. You hear?
Yes, sir, I sure will. I promise. I'll tell it just like it happened.
Barkeep, tell Dolan the regulator's business in Lincoln is finished, unless he wants to try killing another innocent man.
I'll make sure he gets the message.
Well, thanks. You have a good evening now, you hear?
I'm coming, goddammit, I'm coming.
The sweating bartender stood in front of Jimmy Dolan. Dolan in his front parlor was wearing a nightshirt and rubbing sleep out of his eyes.
Falcon McAllister and them 3 regulators just plumb blowed Kenny and his men to pieces, Mr. Dolan. Kenny's still alive on the floor of the saloon, and he's suffering something awful. He's gonna die a hard death, Mr. Dolan. McAllister told me to tell you a message. He said...
Jesus, get in here. They told you to give me a message.
Yeah. They said if you didn't let the whole matter drop, or if you sent anybody after him, they'd be back to have a talk with you. What are you gonna do, Mr. Dolan?
I'm gonna take their advice. There's been enough killing in Lincoln.
Falcon had his mind made up. Before he left the New Mexico Territory to return home, he meant to deliver a warning to the political power behind one side of the range war. He was sick and tired of seeing honest ranchers losing cattle to rustlers and outlaws. In Santa Fe, he was directed to the office of Thomas B. Catron, United States District Attorney for the New Mexico Territory. Considered by many to be the most influential man in New Mexico, he was also making a huge profit with his contracts to provide beef to the army posts there. Falcon stood in the plaza, crowded with shoppers, and stared at the adobe building for a moment. He walked into the district attorney's office wearing his pistols, poorly concealed by the tails of his tailored suit coat. He carried a pair of gun belts over his left forearm, heavy with the two Colts stuck in their holsters. A man in shirt sleeves looked up from a ledger.
What may I do for you, sir?
He seemed annoyed by McAllister's presence, although his gaze did stray to the six guns Falcon carried.
I need to see Thomas Catron.
You have an appointment?
Don't figure I need one, mister. You tell him Falcon McAllister is here, and I've got a couple of deathbed messages for him from two men who worked for him. Deke Slayton and Roy Cobb.
I've never heard of either one of them. However, it would make no difference. Mr. Catron is busy at the moment.
You tell him anyway. And tell him if he refuses to see me now, I'll go all the way to Washington, to the Department of Justice with these messages. It has to do with these guns and holsters I'm carrying. Them and the men who wore them were hired by Mr. Catron, and he'll want to know the outcome of his little business venture down in Lincoln County. You might mention the South Spring Ranch of John Chisholm to him, just in case he needs to refresh his memory.
Falcon swept his coattail away from the pistol he wore on his right hip.
Whatever he's doing, he'll stop long enough to hear what I have to say before I send that wire to his bosses in Washington.
The clerk glanced at Falcon's gun again.
Well, I'll tell him, Mr. McAllister, but he's very busy at the moment. You'll have to come back when he can grant you an appointment. The United States attorney can't simply cancel what he's doing to talk to some stranger about things he knows nothing about. He is a very busy man.
Oh, I doubt it'll take long. If I was a gambling man, I'd bet big money he'll see me right away. Be sure you remember those two names I gave you, Deke Slayton and Roy Cobb.
You know, I can have you thrown out of here or arrested. You simply cannot barge in here like this demanding an appointment.
Go ahead and send for the marshal now. I imagine the law would like to hear why I'm here to talk to Catron about his two hired gunmen and the gang of renegade Apaches he sent down to John Chisholm's South Springs Ranch to rustle his cow herds.
Oh, you must be mistaken. Mr. Catron would never be involved in anything illegal.
No mistake, mister. Thomas Catron hired two gunmen and a band of renegade Apaches to steal a part of John Chisholm's herd, and I can prove it. I have statements from the men he hired in front of a witness. Unless Catron is interested in seeing what the inside of a jail cell looks like, he'll talk to me right away.
Are you accusing the United States District Attorney of an illegal act?
I'm not only accusing him of it, I can prove it. Now go tell Mr. Catron what I said, and tell him I'll give him exactly 5 minutes to see me. Otherwise, I'm headed to the telegraph office to contact some friends of mine in Washington.
This is preposterous, but I'll give him your message.
I thought I told you...
Please, sir, let me talk to you inside.
Falcon stood waiting.
Mr. Catron has found time to speak to you.
Imagine that. Must be my lucky day.
Thomas Catron was a small man with a pencil-thin mustache, dressed in an expensive brown business suit and bow tie. He was chubby, his stomach straining the buttons on his silk vest. When Falcon walked in his office, Catron's eyelids slitted. He allowed his gaze to fall to the pair of gun belts dangling from Falcon's forearm. Falcon came over to Catron's desk.
I've told you have some ridiculous story about men you claim worked for me raiding Mr. Chisholm's ranch in order to steal some of his cattle.
Falcon tossed a pair of gun belts and holstered pistols on top of Catron's desk.
You recognize these?
No. Why should I? They are only two pistols. They can belong to anyone. Half the men in Santa Fe carry guns.
They belong to a couple of boys you hired to lead a band of Mescalero Apache renegades off the reservation to rustle some of John Chisholm's cattle.
That's absurd. You can't prove a thing, Mr.
McAllister. Falcon McAllister. And I can prove every damn word I just said.
I wouldn't have anything to do with such an endeavor. I am a United States District Attorney, and I uphold the law.
It's like this, Catron. You hide behind your official title while you hire others to do your dirty work. You're in the beef contracting business with the government.
There is no law against that.
There is if the beef you sell to the Indian reservations and the Army post is stolen.
Once again, let me state for the record, I am a United States District Attorney for the New Mexico Territory. I do not break the law. It is my job to enforce it.
You've done a damn poor job, Catron, and you've got your dirty hands in the stolen beef business up to your neck. These pieces of iron belong to Deke Slayton and Roy Cobb. They're both dead now, along with about 25 Apaches who worked for them the night they tried to steal John's cows. I just happened to be riding along when it took place.
I could have you charged with murder. I could send you to the gallows.
Not this time, Catron. Before Roy Cobb and Deke Slayton died, they confessed to working for you and to robbing John Chisholm's ranch. I can prove it. I have witnesses and a pile of dead bodies to show a judge and a jury.
What is it you want from me, Mr. McAllister?
Some sign that you've got good sense. If you send just one more raider down to John's pastures or steal another single head of beef in Lincoln County, I'll take what I know to the governor.
He won't believe you.
Falcon picked up the guns on Catron's desk.
I reckon we'll both have to wait and see about that. Good day now.
Within minutes, twice convicted murderer Luis Valdez was listening patiently to Thomas Catron's instructions. Standing beside Luis was another hired killer, Ramon Soto. Both gunmen served as bodyguards for Catron, often handling special assignments for him, which sometimes included killing people who knew too much or got in the way.
Deacon Roy bungled it. A tall man who recently left my office killed them both and all of the Apaches, or so he said. He delivered these guns, saying they belonged to Slayton and Cobb, and then he gave me a warning. Unless John Chisholm's and everyone else's cattle in Lincoln County are left alone, he will take what he knows to my superiors in Washington and to Governor Wallace. He claims to have witnesses to confessions of my complicity. I can't run that risk. His name is Falcon McAllister. He is not from this city. I want him dead.
Don't worry. I will kill him for you, Señor Catron.
A pair of cartridge belts hung from each of Valdez's shoulders. He carried a modified Colt 44-40, a Mason conversion known for its speed and reliability.
Tell me what he looks like and where I can find him. Ramon and I will bring you his head.
I'm sure he's still in town. He left less than an hour ago. He's riding a big black stallion. He wears two pistols. He is unusually tall. He wore a dark suit coat and a flat-brimmed Stetson hat.
We will find him, senor.
Ramon followed Luis to the door. Ramon had a pair of Walker Colt 44s buckled around his waist.
If it is not important to you, Senor Catron, one of us will shoot him in the back and it will be finished. Unless you want us to do it some other way.
I don't care where you shoot him. I don't give a damn how it gets done. Just don't leave any witnesses.
He is as good as dead. We split up, Ramon. You ride the west side. I will take the east side of town. If you find him, and if it can be done easily with no one watching who can identify you, then kill him at once. If shooting him where he is will be more difficult, come looking for me. We will follow him and choose the right place to earn our money.
Señor Catron looks worried. Is it possible this Falcon McAllister was good enough to kill Deke and Roy without ambushing them in the dark? Or killing them while they slept? Deke was very good with a gun.
I do not care, Ramon. This time, Falcon McAllister will be the hunted instead of the hunter. He will not be expecting us.
Ramon rode his sorrel past the slaughterhouse owned by Thomas Catron and his partners. Stacks of curing cow hides gave off a rancid smell outside the butchering plant where the carcasses were hung and cored. He spied a black horse tied to a fence near the pens where live cattle awaited the sledgehammer and the bleeding knife and a squeeze chute inside. A lanky man in a dark coat and a flat brim hat was peering over the fence, examining the cows.
That is him. I bet he's looking for John Chisholm's brand among the cattle.
He reined over toward the fence, a
appearing casual about it as he neared the corrals. As Senor Catron had described, a man named McAllister wore two pistols underneath his coat. He didn't seem to notice Ramon's approach. At a distance of 20 feet, Ramon drew his right-hand Walker Colt. This would be a perfect shot in McAllister's back. He took careful aim at the center of McAllister's spine. Suddenly, Falcon whirled around with a gun in his fist. Ramon's horse reared. He fell backward out of his saddle. Ramon fell flat on his back with a spearhead of unbearable pain knifing through his chest. A shadow fell across his face. Blinded by pain, he could barely make out the features of the man looking down at him.
You ain't much good as a back shooter. You die slow, you bastard.
Luis had heard the crack of gunshots coming from the slaughterhouse. He spurred his Grulla into a headlong run down a narrow road leading to the Santa Fe Packing Company's butchering plant. He jerked out his mace and Colt, ready for anything. Racing out of the business district, he swerved toward the long adobe building and cattle corrals a quarter mile away, set off by itself because of the smells green cowhides and entrails produced as they began to dry. Almost at once, he saw Ramon's horse wandering riderless in a vacant field south of the killer plant. Luis rode straight toward the packing plant without a trace of fear in his heart. He had shot down some of the West's most notorious gunmen in stealth and in face-to-face duels. McAllister would be no different. All he had to do was fire. He saw Ramon's corpse lying next to a corral fence.
Mierda.
Luis looked around him, his jaw clamped angrily. He saw a big black stallion tied to a corral pole farther to the north, but there was no sign of McAllister. Tightening his grip on his .44-40, he heeled his horse forward. No matter where he looked, riding past stacks of stinking cowskins, he found no sign of Falcon.
Donde est?
Right here, Cabron. I reckon you're looking for me.
Luis was certain that if he turned around, the man would shoot him. Decided to try to buy some time until he could catch McAllister unawares.
I am not looking for anyone, senor. I heard a gun and came to see if someone was in trouble.
He still held the mason in his right fist, partially concealed from anyone who stood behind him.
You make a lousy liar, amigo. You came to kill me. Thomas Catron sent both of you.
But you are wrong, senor.
Luis twisted in the saddle, aiming for the sound of the voice, catching sight of a man standing between two big piles of cowhide. Something flattened Luis's nose, tunneling through his brain, exiting out the back of his head. As Falcon crested a hill, he slowed Diablo and looked back over his shoulder at the bustling town of Santa Fe. He wheeled Diablo around and started his journey toward the Dragoon Mountains. His brother had wired him the renegades who killed his wife and headed there. As Diablo loped down the trail, a lone bald eagle soared overhead. Falcon glanced up at the magnificent bird wheeling across an azure sky and was reminded of some words in a poem by Alexander Smith.
I would rather be remembered by a song than a victory.
He leaned forward and patted Diablo's neck.
Hey, Diablo. You think anyone will remember Billy the Kid in a song? I wonder. I do wonder at that.
Mexican maidens play guitars and sing, songs about Billy, that boy bandit king, before this young manhood reached a sad end, had a notch on his pistol for 21 men. Satisfied, there's 21 men that I put bullets through, and Sheriff Pat Garrett's gonna make 22. Well, this is how Billy the Kid met his fate. A big moon was shining, the hour was late. Shot down by Pat Garrett, Silver City's best friend. The poor outlaw's life has reached its sad end.
Song of Eagles is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1999, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, David Coyne, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Kate Torrey, Michael Replogle, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Tim Carlin, and Christopher Graybill. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Vocal editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler and Brian Rogers. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Song of Eagles, be sure to look for our other graphic audio titles, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Since they first came together, the Cerberus Warriors have dedicated themselves to one mission: eradicate the baronial overlords by any means necessary. Sometimes the team has taken the fight to them. Others, it's been a matter of merely staying alive. This time, it comes down to keeping a piece of history out of the wrong hands. Very old, very powerful hands.
Well, over the centuries, you adopted many guises and embarked on many paths, venturing forth as Shiwan Khan, Wu Fang, Yen Sin, Lo Pan. The list of your alter egos is endless, as all the crimes you perpetrated under those names. History has hailed you as both a visionary and a criminal mastermind, a genocidal monster and a liberator. Now, as Wei Kiang, you are merely an enfeebled old patriarch who cannot die but can only be killed. You stand now on the brink of doom.
You say you know where the other eight rings can be found?
Within the Great Pyramid of China in Xi'an.
An ancient evil unleashes war on an old associate of Kane's to reclaim a source of unimaginable power, the Fountain of Youth itself. And the enemy is willing to do whatever is necessary to get it.
A woman always speaks the truth under pain.
Not always.
You are not aware of my methods.
Deep within the Orient lies a cache of technology that could turn the tide of the war for whoever arrives first to claim it. Death, deception, and double dealing lie along the path to immortality conferred by Hydra's Ring.
Come in, Jared.
A scheme to destroy water supplies worldwide has gripped Stony Man headquarters.
Another dam was just destroyed. This time it's in our own backyard.
And one of their own has been caught in the sabotage.
Stony Base! Strike the Stony Base!
What do we know about the parties responsible? The CIA is clueless. The Peruvians have no leads that they're willing to talk about.
But for the people responsible, the destruction of the dams is only stage one.
Soon, there'll be many more people in need of emergency water supplies.
We want to know what you guys had to do with the bombing of the Southern California Water Conservation Authority dam yesterday.
I don't know of no dam, man.
This could take a while.
We don't have a while.
Stony Man number 44, Thirst for Power.
I just blew the hell out of something.
Jamie Ian and Kate McAllister are together now, buried side by side on a ridge overlooking the huge Colorado Valley they had settled and the town they had founded. It's up to their children now to carry on the McAllister legacy. Falcon McAllister is more than willing to take on that task. He's the spitting image of his father, Jamie. He stands 6'3" and is heavy with muscle. Just like his father, Falcon literally doesn't know his own strength. And just like his father, Falcon is quick on the shoot. Lightning quick. Now, after the cowardly murder of his father, Falcon is out for revenge against the Noonan gang.
You dirty son of a bitch!
Falcon reached up and jerked a bridle off a nail on a post. He proceeded to beat the snot out of Red with the silver inlaid bridle.
Please! Please! No more! No more!
You walk real light around me should we ever meet up again.
On his quest, he'll become embroiled in the deadly Wyoming Range Wars.
Well now, looks like we done found us some rustlers. The boss said he'd been losing beeves out here.
We're pushing those cattle back to Snake Range. If you had any sense, you'd have circled around and seen that by looking at the tracks before you came riding in here and running that mouth.
I think that old-timer just called you a dummy.
Yeah, Monroe. You gonna take that lip off of that old coot?
I think I'll hang you first, you old bastard.
Kip, Big Bob, and Falcon had spread out, 12 to 15 feet between them. All three of them were wearing two pistols. Kip and Big Bob had the second pistol tucked behind their gun belts. Falcon wore a two-gun rig, the left side 44 worn on a slant, butt forward.
Drop them guns, boys. We caught you cold, rustling. There's no use arguing about it.
A man tossed a running iron down to the ground.
There's the proof.
Don't get dirt in the coffee. I got my mouth all fixed for a cup.
You'll never get a chance to drink another cup, you old fart.
To be no more than a couple of years away from your mommy's titty, you're about a half-mouthy son of a bitch, ain't you?
You son of a bitch!
A second later, the snake-branded cattle were off and running, the sounds of gunfire spooking them from their quiet grazing into a stampede. Falcon blew the flat-faced one out of the saddle. Bob's pistol barked, and the mouthy puncher went ass over elbows backwards. Kip's six-shooter roared, and a third snake gun hand's butt left the saddle.
Falcon will take on the notorious Silver Dollar Kid.
You got anything you want to say before you die, McAllister?
I have no intention of dying, kid. You got it all wrong.
What do you mean? I'm the Silver Dollar Kid. No man has ever beat me to the draw.
You never faced anyone worth a damn, kid. All you ever faced was two big wannabes. I'm telling you to back away and get out, or die where you stand.
You're telling me? I know what you're trying to do, McAllister. It won't work. You're just trying to save your own skin.
You're a damn fool, boy. What's Gilman paying you? $75 a month? You ready to die for a few dollars?
Time for talking is over, McAllister. You can't talk your way out of this.
I tried. Nobody can say I didn't try.
Finally, Falcon will come face to face with Nance Noonan himself.
Falcon McAllister, you son of a bitch! You played hell for a fact, but this day ain't over. I know you got kids, Falcon, and I know where they are down in Colorado. I'll kill them, McAllister. I'll make certain none of your stinking offspring lives. They're dead, McAllister, you hear me? Your kids is dead!
Don't miss 1 minute of this action-packed saga of blood and revenge. Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.